This program is provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
So if you walked up to a barista at the World Economic Forum in Dalian this week, you didn't get your coffee from a human?
No, you definitely did not.
Right, you had this highly articulated robot that just, you know, looks at you, calculates the actual physics of an espresso machine in real time, and then just hands you a cup.
Yeah, directly to you.
And I mean, this wasn't like an animatronic routine at a theme park. And crucially, it wasn't American. So today we are opening up a highly specialized intelligence briefing. It's dated June 25, 2026.
Which is today, yeah.
Exactly. And this deep dive isn't just about one flashy robot making lattes. We are looking at a massive simultaneous convergence of breakthroughs happening across China's tech sector right now.
Right. The sheer density of what is happening is the real story here. I mean, we are analyzing a feedback loop.
A massive one.
Yeah. We have sources covering the physical robotics layer, these mind-boggling valuations for open source AI models, a radical shift in how telecommunications networks operate, and the brute force manufacturing of advanced semiconductor chips.
Which is a lot to cover.
It is. But the goal today is to map out how these aren't just isolated industries anymore. Like, right, they're feeding directly into one another to build this fully vertically integrated technological ecosystem.
So whether you are, you know, prepping for a strategy meeting or building a startup, or you just want to understand where the global tech race is actually heading, we're going to filter out the noise for you today.
Absolutely.
Because what is happening in this briefing is going to affect the tools you use every single day. So let's start with the physical hardware. The barista robot at Davos, that's the Matrix 3. But that's just one data point, right?
It is, yeah. But look at the spatial and temporal alignment occurring this very week. It's crazy. You have three major robotics and AI events happening simultaneously.
Right.
There is the Mobile World Congress in Shanghai, the Summer Davos in Dalian, and the Innovation Summit in Hangzhou. And that Hangzhou Summit alone has, I think, over 250 research institutions and tech companies participating.
The numbers coming out of these summits are just wild. I mean, let's look at the Mobile World Congress in Shanghai for a second. Honor showcased their humanoid robot. They named it Flash.
Great name.
Right. And before it even took the stage, Flash ran a half marathon in Beijing. And it finished the 21-kilometer race in exactly 50 minutes and 26 seconds.
Which is incredible.
Just to give you some context, the human world record is 57 minutes and 20 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, so it completely shattered it.
Well, and shattering the human record is visually impressive, sure, but the engineering underneath is what really matters here. I mean, to run a half marathon, a bipedal robot isn't just, you know, moving its legs.
Right, it's not a toy.
No, it is constantly running these deeply complex physics calculations. Mm-hmm. Every single time its foot hits uneven pavement, the system has to recalculate its center of mass, adjust the torque in its ankles, and simultaneously manage the immense thermal output from its actuators so the battery doesn't literally melt down.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Doing that flawlessly for 50 minutes requires an astonishing level of real-time embodied intelligence.
And they are also hosting humanoid robot soccer penalty shootouts at the same event, which, no, sounds like a gimmick. But again, that is an extreme test of visual processing and dynamic balance.
Exactly. And that real-time processing is powered by what they call foundation models.
Mm-hmm.
Like at Davos, that Matrix 3 robot pouring coffee. It's using the Wavy foundation model.
Okay.
Because it has to handle real-world chaos. Like, a sterile lab is one thing, but a bustling summit with 1,700 attendees means the lighting is constantly changing, people are bumping the table, cups are all different sizes.
Right, it's unpredictable.
Totally. The model has to seamlessly merge its visual perception with high-level physical planning to operate those dexterous hands without, you know, crushing the cup or pouring boiling water on a diplomat.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because we see these kinds of public demonstrations all the time, right?
Sure.
A robot running a pre-planned route, or a barista pouring coffee at a highly controlled VIP event. Is that actually a mature product? Or is this just the tech world's equivalent of an auto show concept car?
The concept car analogy is a good one.
Yeah, like, you see a car with no steering wheel that hovers, but you know you're never going to actually buy it. Is that what this is?
See, that is the critical distinction we need to make here. If it were just one robot at one show, it would absolutely be a concept car. But the briefing details the underlying scale of this ecosystem, and it's massive.
No, massive.
Well, China's humanoid robot market hit 8.24 billion RMB in 2025. That captures roughly 50% of the entire global market.
Half the market.
Yeah. You have over 150 companies fiercely competing right now. Furthermore, their monthly production of standard industrial robots just passed 100,000 units.
So the sheer volume means they've entirely moved past the bespoke prototype phase.
Exactly. When you have 150 companies competing to build the actuators, the sensors, and the battery packs, you trigger massive economies of scale.
Right, making it cheaper.
The cost of a robotic joint just plummets because factories are churning out tens of thousands of them. The hardware becomes cheap, it becomes modular, and incredibly mature.
So the robot hardware is surprisingly mature, but I mean, a robot with great titanium joints is just an expensive, heavy mannequin if it can't actually perceive its environment or reason through a task.
Right, the brain is the hard part.
Exactly. That kind of complex, real-time perception requires an immense amount of compute power, which, frankly, explains why the software side of this ecosystem is seeing valuations that honestly look like typos.
Yeah, the software brain is where the real leverage is.
Yeah.
And the standout in the briefing here is Zippo AI.
Zippo, right.
They're the developer behind the GLM 5.2 model. And this week, their market cap just crossed 1 trillion Hong Kong dollars.
Which is what, in U.S. dollars?
That is roughly 128 billion U.S. dollars.
Yeah.
And get this, since their IPO in January of this year, 2026, their stock has surged over 2,400%.
A 2,400% surge in 6 months. That is insane. I mean, JP Morgan is projecting their revenue will spike by 534% this year alone.
It's astronomical.
To justify that kind of money, the model has to be world class, right? Like, yeah. It can't just be okay.
No, it is world class. If you look at the Code Arena benchmark, which tests how well an AI can handle complex front-end web development, GLM 5.2 ranks second globally.
Number two in the world.
Yeah, it is sitting just behind Anthropic's Fable 5. But here's the thing. The technology itself is only half the story.
What's the other half?
The real driver of that valuation is how Zippo released the model. They put GLM 5.2 out under an MIT open source license.
Wow. Okay, let's break down what that actually means for the uninitiated listening. An MIT license basically means anyone can download the core model, modify the code, build their own apps on top of it, and even sell those apps completely for free.
Without owing Zippo a single dime.
Right. So my question is, how does giving away your flagship product for free create a $128 billion company?
It creates ecosystem lock-in. By making the foundation model free and incredibly capable, every developer, every single robotic startup, and every enterprise IT department starts building their entire infrastructure around it.
Because it's the best free tool available.
Exactly. And once 100,000 companies have integrated GLM 5.2 into their daily operations, Zippo monetizes the periphery. They charge for premium API access, enterprise-grade cloud compute, custom fine-tuning, and, you know, dedicated technical support. They essentially become the default operating system for the AI era.
But there is a massive geopolitical catalyst that handed them this market share in the first place. The U.S. implemented strict export controls that flat out banned the sale or access of top-tier American models, like Anthropic's Fable 5, to China.
Right. And that ban instantly deleted the biggest competitors from the Chinese market.
Yeah.
Created this massive vacuum.
Right. Because developers who wanted to use Fable 5 suddenly couldn't.
So they all flocked to the best available alternative, which was the open source Zippo model.
So by walling off the American AI ecosystem, did the U.S. export bans accidentally create a protectionist incubator? I mean, think about it. If the U.S. had never banned Fable 5, you have to wonder if Chinese developers would have just defaulted to the American model.
That's a fascinating counterfactual.
Right, leaving Zippo as a minor player instead of a $128 billion giant.
It is a profound unintended consequence, really. Like, a policy intended to stifle AI development in China actually forced a level of domestic self-reliance that completely accelerated their industry.
They're backed into a corner.
Yeah, they had no choice but to build their own world-class model, and now that model is competing globally.
But running a model of that scale isn't something you do on a laptop. If you have hundreds of thousands of embodied AI robots wandering around cities and millions of users querying a massive foundation model, the sheer volume of data moving back and forth is unprecedented.
It's massive.
The current internet pipes just aren't built for that.
Which is the next critical pillar of this briefing. At the Mobile World Congress in Shanghai, Huawei, alongside China Mobile, China Telecom, and China Unicom, announced a fundamental shift in how networks operate.
The major players.
All of them. They call it a service network compute integration solution.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. For decades, a telecom company has basically been a dumb pipe, right?
Pretty much.
You pay them $50 a month, and they let you push a certain volume of data through their cables and cell towers. They don't really care if that data is an email, a streaming movie, or a video game. But that is changing. telcos are now trying to shift from being data transmitters to AI token providers.
To understand why, you really have to look at how data actually moves. Currently, our mobile networks are highly asymmetric. They are totally optimized for the downlink.
Right, downloading stuff.
Yeah, you download massive 4K movies to your phone, but you only upload tiny text messages or a photo here and there. But an embodied AI robot or an AI agent operating on your phone flips that entirely.
Because it has to constantly see and hear its environment.
Exactly. The uplink requirements are massive.
Yeah.
Think about a robot navigating a street. It is sending a high-definition LiDAR and video data back to the cloud constantly.
Constantly uploading.
And then the cloud is sending back microsecond command calculations. That requires ultra-wideband, extremely high uplink, and ultra-low latency.
Yeah.
If the network buffers for even half a second while the robot is pouring coffee, or while an AI agent is executing a financial trade,
the system fails. You spill boiling water everywhere.
Exactly. So a flat fee dumb pipe doesn't work anymore. The network has to actually slice itself up dynamically.
What does that mean, network slicing?
Dynamic network slicing allows the telecom provider to dedicate a specific, highly optimized lane of traffic just for AI compute. So in the future, instead of buying a 50 gigabyte data plan, you are buying a bundle of AI processing tokens that comes with guaranteed ultra-low latency network access.
So it's like the water company realizing they shouldn't just charge a flat fee for the pipes, they should charge per drop of purified water.
That's exactly it. The telco isn't just selling you the road anymore. They are selling you the car and the destination all in one package.
And the economic implications of that for you, the everyday user, are staggering. A GSMA report released alongside the conference notes, the mobile sector contributed $1.5 trillion to China's GDP in 2025.
Huge numbers.
That is over 7% of their entire economic output. And they are already looking past 5G to cement this advantage. The briefing highlights that China just officially allocated the U6 gigahertz band for 6G field testing.
Right, the U6 gigahertz band, that's the 6,425 to 7,125 megahertz range, and it is highly coveted.
Why is that specific range so special?
Well, in wireless technology, you always have a trade-off. Lower frequencies, like standard 4G, travel very far and penetrate buildings really well, but they can't carry much data.
Yep.
Very high frequencies, on the other hand, like millimeter wave, carry massive amounts of data, but they can't travel far and they get blocked by a single tree or a pane of glass.
So U6 gigahertz is basically the Goldilocks zone.
Exactly. It provides enough continuous bandwidth to handle the massive data payloads of AI tokens, but it has enough physical range that you can actually build a national cellular network without needing a cell tower on literally every single lamppost.
Right. And by formally allocating the spectrum for 6G testing right now, China is generating the real-world radio wave data required to set the global hardware standards. The briefing actually estimates this puts them a full 12 to 18 months ahead of the US and Europe, who are largely still just debating spectrum allocation for 5G advanced.
It's a huge head start.
But, you know, building out a nationwide 6G network and putting advanced AI brains into millions of robots requires physical hardware.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just write better software. You need the actual silicon to process those calculations.
Yeah, the physical tips.
Right. And this brings us to the most fiercely contested bottleneck in the entire global tech economy, semiconductor manufacturing.
If AI is the brain and the 6G network is the nervous system, semiconductors are the cellular building blocks.
Wow.
And the intelligence here confirms a quiet but massive industry shockwave. SAC, China's leading chip maker, has successfully entered mass production of 5-nanometer chips.
Okay, we need to pause and dig into the mechanics of why this was supposed to be impossible. Because the global consensus was that you absolutely could not manufacture a high-performance 5-nanometer chip without extreme ultraviolet lithography machines.
The UUV machines.
Right, UVs. These are made by one single company in the world, ASML in the Netherlands, and their export to China is strictly banned.
The assumption was always that the EUV ban was an impenetrable ceiling, like you couldn't get past it.
Yeah.
Lithography is basically using light to etch microscopic circuit patterns onto a silicon wafer.
Right.
ASML's EUV machines use light wavelengths so incredibly tiny that they can draw these 5-nanometer patterns in a single, clean pass.
But Semsex doesn't have those machines. They're using older, deep ultraviolet or DUV equipment to bypass the export restrictions entirely.
Exactly. And because DUV machines use a wider wavelength of light, you can't draw the tiny 5-nanometer pattern in one go. So Sunmic is using a technique called multi-patterning.
So think of it like trying to print a perfectly crisp, high-resolution color photo using a cheap printer that can only do one color at a time.
That's a perfect analogy.
You have to run the same piece of paper through the printer 4, 5, or 6 times, and every single time you run it through, if the paper shifts by a fraction of a millimeter, the colors blur and the photo is ruined.
That is the exact mechanism. They are running the silicon wafers through the DUV machines multiple times to etch the complex circuits. But aligning these microscopic patterns across multiple passes introduces massive error rates.
Naturally.
If a layer is off by literally a few atoms, the entire chip shorts out and is just useless garbage.
Which explains the critical catch here. The yield rate for chips like Huawei's new AI processor, the Ascend 910C, is reported to be only 20 to 40%.
Right.
For context, TSMC in Taiwan, using the advanced EUV machines, usually operates at an 80% plus yield rate.
So SNCC is throwing away 6 to 8 out of every 10 chips they manufacture. The production costs are more than double what they would be on an open global market.
Okay, I have to push back on this being a massive success then. In any normal business environment, if a factory has a 20% yield rate, throwing away 8 out of 10 products, they are bankrupt by Friday.
Oh, totally. Commercially, it would be a complete failure.
How is SMIC surviving that kind of astronomical cash burn, let alone calling it a strategic success? Like, at what point does the sheer cost make the technology irrelevant? Is this just government-subsidized brute force so they can say they did it?
You have to view this through the lens of technological sovereignty, not free market economics.
Okay.
The Chinese state is heavily subsidizing these losses because the alternative is unacceptable to them. The AI foundation models, the 6G networks, the robotics sector, none of those care how much the chip costs to make.
They just need it to exist.
Exactly. They only care that the computational power is there. If the chips don't exist, the entire trillion-dollar ecosystem stalls out entirely. So by absorbing the financial loss of a 20% yield, they are just brute forcing their way through the bottleneck to keep their tech sector moving.
It's an incredible display of state-backed resilience, honestly. Meanwhile, the U.S. government knows this workaround is happening. The briefing notes that the U.S. is strategically delaying adding over 100 Chinese tech firms to its restricted entity list.
Right.
This includes companies like the AI developer DeepSeek and the memory chip maker CXMT. Why hold off if the sanctions are already being bypassed?
It is a really delicate balancing act. While national security officials advocate for much tighter sanctions, the current U.S. administration is trying to manage the broader geopolitical relationship.
They want to avoid escalating trade tensions into a full-blown crisis.
Exactly. Adding 100 major tech companies to a blacklist overnight would be a massive diplomatic escalation.
But hitting pause gives those companies precious breathing room. Take a company like CXMT. They make high bandwidth memory, or HBM3. AI models are so fast that they constantly starve for data if the memory chips can't feed them fast enough.
Yeah, the memory bottleneck is real.
HBM3 is essentially widening the highway directly into the processor. So giving CXMT time to perfect that technology closes one of the last remaining gaps in China's domestic supply chain.
And the unintended consequence of that diplomatic caution is that it gives the entire vertically integrated stack time to solidify. They are building their own chips, their own memory, their own telecommunications networks, and their own open source AI models.
Which brings us to the final piece of the briefing. This entirely self-contained, sanction-proof ecosystem is allowing China to make a very specific, highly political pitch to the rest of the world.
Yeah, we saw this narrative formally deployed at the summer Davos. China is heavily pushing the idea that AI should be treated as a commons, you know, like a global public good.
And looking at this objectively as observers, you can see two entirely conflicting paradigms emerging here. The argument presented at Davos is that researchers, educators, and healthcare workers in developing nations shouldn't have to seek permission or pay exorbitant licensing fees to American tech monopolies to use vital AI tools.
They are framing this as a moral counterargument to the Western model.
Right.
The U.S. framework largely treats top-tier AI as proprietary, highly commercialized, and carefully guarded due to very real national security concerns regarding how these powerful models could be misused.
Which makes sense.
Right. But the Chinese framework advocates for an open source, accessible ecosystem like the ZIPU model we discussed, positioning it as essential free infrastructure for the global south.
And just to be completely clear here to you listening, the point of this deep dive isn't to validate one geopolitical strategy over the other. We aren't taking sides.
No, absolutely not.
The briefing simply outlines how this public good narrative is being used as a strategic tool to build global alliances. If a hospital in Kenya can integrate a world-class diagnostic AI for free using an open-source Chinese model, rather than paying millions to a U.S. enterprise, that builds immense soft power.
It is entirely about the mechanics of global influence. By framing open-source AI as a global commons, it creates a highly compelling value proposition for nations who want to participate in the AI revolution without being locked into a restricted Western ecosystem.
So bringing this all the way back down to you, if you are leading IT procurement or building a startup or just utilizing AI in your daily workflow, this clash of paradigms impacts you directly.
It really does.
It means the developer tools available to you, the APIs you integrate, and the underlying costs of your technology are being shaped by a global tug of war. You aren't just choosing between two pieces of software anymore. You are choosing between two entirely different global infrastructure philosophies.
It creates a completely bifurcated tech world. Understanding which foundation you are building your business on and the geopolitical realities that might suddenly restrict or subsidize that foundation is literally a mandatory element of risk management today.
Okay, let's do a rapid recap of the convergence we've mapped out from this intelligence briefing. We started with the physical layer, humanoid robots, dynamically calculating real-world physics to run marathons and serve coffee.
Right.
We saw that those robots are powered by trillion-dollar open-source foundation models that grew massive, largely because U.S. export bans removed their competition.
And to handle the immense uplink data from those AI agents, telecommunications networks are fundamentally shifting from flat-fee data pipes to dynamic AI token economies.
Yep.
Utilizing that U6 gigahertz spectrum to launch 6G networks way ahead of schedule.
And all of that massive computational infrastructure is running on 5-nanometer silicon chips that are being brute forced into existence using older multi-patterning lithography, despite a massive 80% failure rate, simply to ensure the ecosystem doesn't collapse.
Which leaves us with a final thought to mull over, really.
What's that?
If AI truly becomes as fundamental to human society over the next decade as electricity or the internet, the geopolitical winner of this era might not be the country with the most advanced, highly guarded model.
Oh, interesting.
It might be the country that successfully becomes the cheapest, most accessible utility provider for the developing world. Like, will open source AI become the ultimate soft power weapon of the 21st century?
Wow. That is a brilliant lens to view this through. The landscape is moving incredibly fast, and the connections between a robot making coffee in Dalian and a global semiconductor war are much tighter than they appear. Keep questioning the tech you use every day and look for the invisible infrastructure powering it. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
This program is provided by Lawyer Kyungjin Kim.